presentation, even though we're formed by International Health, is rather U.S.-centric. It's one part of a session I do in the World Bank flagship course. The other part is from developing countries. And the reason I use the U.S. is because it's the most open market in the health sector, so you see a lot of the perversity that happens when the health sector is market-driven. When I first designed this about a year ago, there was a real battle of emails between myself and the man who was in charge of this at the World Bank, where I was accused of industry bashing several times. It was against what the World Bank allowed, industry bashing. And I think that's a very important point, because most of us who belong to APHA are slightly liberal. And I'm not trying to bash industry here. I'm talking about market failures. So it's not a criticism of what industry is doing. Industry is being very clever and exploiting our ignorance or the asymmetrical information that exists in the health sector, as we've seen particularly with what Omar just did and also on infant formula. And so it is more of a call for where government needs to intervene, both with regulation and an investment in certain areas which are not of interest to industry. There's a classic article called Abnormal Economics in the Health Sector, done by Bill Shao about 20, 25 years ago, which talks about market failures in the health sector. So looking at the pharmaceutical sector, we're looking at things that are exaggerated within that subsector of health, within pharmaceuticals. Key barriers to market entry. The man who spoke before me at the World Bank last week used an analogy between purchasing potatoes as an open competitive market where you had free entry of potato growers and sellers and competition and ease of the consumer in assessing the product and how good or bad it was, and how that fails when we come to health sector consultations and especially health insurance. So there are these barriers to entry, which can be just being licensed as a physician. In the case of the pharmaceutical sector, it's the magnitude of the investment required. Right now, the pharmaceutical industry is estimating that bringing a new drug to market takes about $800 million. And it's very much dominated by multinationals, although that's beginning to change. One of the other speakers talked about how the industry had consolidated and gone from 60-some to 25 major players. Patents and brand names are a terrific barrier. The patent itself is then prolonged through the power of the brand name. And there's a lot of regulation, which is designed to protect us as consumers, but also industry uses it to prevent more entry into the market and prevent competition. If we look at vaccines as what we can call a merit commodity, one of the very best interventions from a public health perspective, you can see merger in 1989, acquisitions, until we have Adventis Pasteur, consolidated or mergers. And if we then look at the market in 2001 for vaccines, you can see that Adventis represents 23% of the market, and there are only four or five major players. And this is a category of products which is preventive, is the most powerful thing. But it's of limited interest to the industry because the margins are so poor for vaccines. And part of the reason for that is we have big institutional buyers, we have whole governments buying, and so the profit margins are very low for vaccines. There's also a lot more risk and complexity in doing clinical trials. I have a few cartoons here that they were trying to cut out of the World Bank slides last year, too. So basically, a problem, an underlying issue is that the incentives of industry, which are normal incentives for industry, are not in alignment with our public health goals quite frequently. And this is not to criticize industry, because especially for those of you who are about my age, you probably have a fair bit of your pension plan unknowingly invested in the pharmaceutical industry. It is a major engine in the world economy. And you can see in things like regulation in countries where Germany is more cautious about introducing strong regulation because the pharmaceutical industry is a major part of the German economy, whereas the Dutch, which don't have much of an industry, have very powerful regulation. And they are looking for blockbusters, and I've been saying for about 15 years that if they could figure out how to make a woman like me look 10 years younger, they'd invest millions in it before they'd be worried about saving babies in Africa. And I hadn't thought of Viagra, but we know what's happened with that one. So these kinds of lifestyle drugs that are targeted for the affluent markets are very lucrative, and they're looking for profits because that's what their shareholders want. And innovation is focused on those markets versus very poor countries, and even though the health needs are enormous. I asked the 80 people we had in the World Bank last week, what's this? Boys, the word from the field is less cures and more lengthy treatments. Anybody give me a great product that's doing that right now? Okay, ARVs and HIV/AIDS. Chronic treatment, very expensive. You stay on them permanently. A major risk in Africa right now. So very skillful marketing strategies are used because this is a sector where there is enormous information, asymmetrical information, more so than the rest of the health sector. And it undermines rational choice, which is what we need in a free market, where consumers can make rational decisions, both by providers and by consumers. There are at least half a dozen books that have come out in the last decade, more than that, I think. One of the most famous is Marcia Angel, The Truth About the Drug Companies, who was the editor of the New England Journal. And it's all about how biased the information is in journals. Now, if I were to go back to the potato analogy, if I were a potato producer and I had invented a new hybrid potato and we did some research and found that the potato had a higher calorie content than other potatoes and didn't taste as good, I wouldn't publish it. On the other hand, if I found that my potato stayed firm and crisp in the refrigerator for many more months and the skin was particularly good when you baked it, I would publish that research. So the drug companies, which control most of the clinical trials, choose to publish what they publish. And that bias is now being recognized and addressed to some extent. It affects prescribing. Prescribers, even when they try very hard to be well-informed, aren't. The investment in R&D, even though this is an industry that's supposed to be driven, famous for research and development, is relatively small compared to marketing. The marketing techniques are extremely well developed, and the profits of this industry have been 14-15%, while other companies, other industries have been running around 3-5% for years. They're just slipping now. Drug representatives are the most effective marketing technique. This is faculty members who actually change their prescribing practices based on an interaction with a drug rep versus residents who are clearly more easily influenced. But faculty were more likely to suggest a change in the hospital formulary based on an interaction with a drug rep than the residents. Primary sources of information about drugs, the first source, which is very powerful, is mostly commercial, 68%, and also it's the most influential in the decision to prescribe. The influence of scientific papers, and we've already talked about how the scientific papers themselves are biased in what is revealed and published versus drug advertisements. How physicians feel their values about marketing, what they think is very appropriate, what they think is somewhat appropriate, and what they think is not appropriate at all. You see, luggage is not appropriate at all. This is my Pfizer bag. Pfizer is, in terms of annual revenues, a little smaller than Hungary right now, but bigger than Bulgaria in terms of the power of multinational corporations. And despite what the physicians thought of what was appropriate or not, this is how many of them participated in these behaviors that they thought were inappropriate. Contrasting perceptions, which gifts are influential, what patients think versus what physicians think. What physicians think the impact of advertising is on them. Not much on me. It's that other guy who's influenced by marketing. This is an example of a trip. Some physicians were offered a trip. The index institution is the yellow line, other centers is the red. So they got the offer to have the trip. You can see the prescribing went up and then it dropped. You might wonder what happened. They were all gone on the trip. This is from Australia, which has excellent drug policies, and an example of information information that's supposed to be helpful to the physician, which it is, but if you click and work on this computer program, there's advertising all over the place. It's meant to help the physician prescribe better. At least that's what it's billed as. So physicians themselves have a problem assessing pharmaceuticals and what they should be prescribing. It's not a commodity like salt or potatoes, but they can do much better. You could say the same thing about our voting. You know, we have to work hard to figure out who are the best candidates, not just watch the TV ads, or we would get a president like the president we have. This asymmetrical information is particularly complicated for patients because they can't assess either the physicians who are prescribing or the pharmaceuticals. They're influenced by sophisticated things, which they think are better, as with bottle feeding. My own mother-in-law, when I was a young mother, used to say, "What do you think they invented bottles for?" And in developing countries, where it's the appeal of injections is legend. There are a lot of things that influence both consumers and pharmacists. We think when consumers self-treat, they're being irrational, but in fact, some recent studies by anthropologists indicate that they're most heavily influenced by the health service providers they've talked to directly or indirectly, and that's really what drives their behavior. Direct-to-consumer advertising, which is not allowed, I don't think, anywhere in Western Europe or Canada, but has been allowed in this country. I was stunned the first time I came in and saw television ads. The expenditure has been going up tremendously, and it's very effective. So there are incentives in the marketing pull, that's the advertising techniques, and the push with margins at the wholesale and retail level. This is from developing countries. This is the hot spot in developing countries for corruption. This is a pie chart from Kenya, which is down around 168 on the Transparency International Index. And only those little yellow slices are actually purchased by the government. The rest of it is all donor inputs. And whoops. This is the so-called spaghetti diagram, which is what the donors have set up to avoid the lack of transparency in procurement in Kenya, where every donor has its own procurement agency and funding source, lots of expense, complications in coordination, and a lot of people with a vested interest in keeping it that way. The big problem now with corruption in pharmaceutical procurement in developing countries is not higher prices. Back in the early 80s when I first began working in this area in Haiti, the Minister of Health's son set up a couple of shell companies, and the problem was that they were just charging a couple cents more for every package. Now the problem is counterfeit drugs. It's an enormous problem. Substandard, chalk, active ingredients are 50% of what they're supposed to be. So the prices may be low, but the drugs are deadly, or can be. We heard a little bit about donations. A lot of them, as you heard, the incentives, the tax incentives, the get rid of the stock that's about to expire because otherwise we have to dispose of it. It's a major problem. It's more of a problem than it is a help in most countries. And of course, any big multinationals are very influential politically. This is from a year ago, Wall Street Journal, with the drug companies funding the Republicans because they are more pro-industry. And this is just a summary of some of the market failures, imperfections in the pharmaceutical industry.